So the world, it hardly needs stating, is a violent place sometimes. Violence is reality. Violence is headline. Violence is entertainment. And from it, one can easily construct a pretty compelling and violent soundtrack of human life in our time.
The almost incomprehensible picture emerging tonight from Norway.
Stunned, bleeding, and in shock, survivors of this morning's bomb blast were brought out one by one.
You proved to me that all this ultraviolence and killing is wrong, wrong, and terribly wrong!
Today, the university was struck with a tragedy that we consider of monumental proportions.
What happens if the manager won't give you the diamonds?
Cut off one of his fingers, the little one.
A fusion there of sounds of real news coverage of real shootings and bombings in Norway, Virginia, Nigeria, and the darkly humorous celebrations of violence in the movies, in this case A Clockwork Orange and Reservoir Dogs. Yet all this barbarity might be considered tame compared to the live audiences in America who showed up to watch lynchings barely a generation ago, or compared to the folks who attended public executions for centuries, or public tortures in the Middle Ages, to say nothing of mass beheadings on the whim of some king or other common rituals consigned to the history books. Is there a way to track violence in human civilization to say one way or another if we are heading away from violence or towards some World War I slaughter or some inevitable technology-driven, say, nuclear winter? Steven Pinker thinks he may have a definitive answer. He's the author of The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. He's a professor of psychology at Harvard University and joins us from the studios of our partner at WGBH Boston. Steven Pinker, it's great to talk to you again. Dr. Pinker, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you. A little technological glitch there. This is an amazingly ambitious book, and I want to just begin by asking, can you describe the way you see it, the difference between feeling as though violence is everywhere and the statistical incidence of violence as you look through the historical record?
Yes, you played a number of clips of reporters at the scenes of horrific violence. But the thing is that last night someone died of old age in Angola and someone else of cancer in Poland and someone else in Indonesia. And there wasn't a camera crew there. If you don't consider how many people are not dying of violence, you can get a very misleading picture of the proportion of violence in the world.
But isn't it the case that as violence declines, doesn't its capacity to outrage increase, even taking the, you know, lurid qualities of the media out of the picture, that the threat of violence becomes greater if the actual incidence of violence becomes rarer?
I think that's right. And in fact, I think an increased sensitivity to violence is one of the things that push the rate of violence down. The impression is, of course, that as we're more upset about violence, we think that it's increased, even though it's just our caring about it that is increased. So we worry about kinds of violence today, like bullying in the schoolyard, that wouldn't even have counted as violence a couple of decades ago, and parts of the world, such as Democratic Republic of the Congo, that were just off the radar screen of the world's concern until recently.
And let's talk a little bit. Describe the sort of four or five, you know, sort of huge narratives that have, you know, epics in human history that have contributed to this decline, ending with the growth of rights of people, of giving people rights, and that having an impact in our time. But you start with the agricultural societies.
Yeah, the first states and governments brought down the amount of tribal raiding and feuding that killed an enormous proportion of the population of prehistoric peoples. There was also a dramatic reduction in the rate of homicide in Europe from the Middle Ages to the present, perhaps a factor of 35. During what's called the Humanitarian Revolution around the time of the Enlightenment, a lot of institutionalized violence, such as burning heretics at the stake, legalized slavery, debtors' prisons, disemboweling a criminal for popular entertainment, were suddenly abolished. Since World War II, developed states and Western European countries thought the better of going to war. They used to go to war about three new wars a year. There hasn't been a war among developed states since the early 1950s. And even in the rest of the world, it's a seldom appreciated fact that deaths from warfare of all kinds, including civil wars and genocides, are dramatically down over the last 20 years. And finally, there's been a growing concern for violence at smaller scales, violence against racial minorities within countries, violence against women, such as domestic violence and rape, violence against children, such as spanking and child abuse, even violence against animals, which is one of the world's concerns now as it never has been before.
We're speaking with Steven Pinker, whose new book is called The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. Let's go a little further into what you were just talking about, the fact that more people at this point are killed by genocide, murder of people by a government, than by war, and why that is. Is it because in a war these are soldiers who are perhaps better equipped to survive, and a genocide is very often against civilians?
Well, it's sometimes said that the safest place to be in a war is in the army, because armies are fed and clothed and protected, and often civilians aren't. It must be added, though, that not all atrocitologists, as they're called, agree that more people are killed in genocides than war, because a lot of those genocides that go into the statistics were conducted during wartime and wouldn't have been possible without the war.
You know, you described that we're coming to the end of the numbers of incidences of violence that have been, you know, throughout history, and that war has declined, and you described this decline very, very compellingly. Yet, you also talk about something called the moralization gap, the capacity of humans to moralize violent behavior. And you describe, you know, Final Solution and some of the euphemisms that come out of the Nazi era. And then you outline some of our day: collateral damage, ethnic cleansing, extraordinary rendition, euphemisms for violent behavior that hides them behind neutral sounding words. It seems to me human beings are just the very beginning of this process. And that might be a trend line to be worth watching on the negative side.
Perhaps. It's not clear that it's any worse now than it was before. And in fact, during the French Revolution, Edmund Burke wrote about a number of the euphemisms like effervescence, meaning mass murder, that were spilling out of France.
Wow.
I don't think violence will ever be eliminated. I believe in human nature, including the rather nasty habit that we have of rationalizing away the violence we commit, using euphemism and various kinds of rationalization and justification. People who actually perpetrate evil never think that they're doing anything particularly wrong. That's one of the reasons so much evil gets perpetrated.
Go ahead.
On the other hand, something has been getting better, namely that there are fewer deaths that are hidden by euphemism as our culture becomes more directed to fact-finding, as there's more pluralism of voices and freedom of the press. The euphemisms can be exposed, and I think that's one of the reasons that things have gotten better, even though our ingenuity is at a constant or maybe even has increased.
There's a sense of economic unease that we've been talking about on the program this morning, and, you know, statistics like 2 billion people have no access to clean drinking water. You know, that could be seen as a form of violence. Around the turn of the 20th century, there were a lot of visionaries before 1914 who said the world is entering a period of infinite and eternal peace. And that was proved really, really to be not the case in 1914, when World War I began, one of the biggest slaughters of all time. Do you worry that you might be heralding something that we would see a reversal on in the next 5 years or so?
I'm careful about making predictions. I think a big war could break out. I think the chances are less than they used to be. And I'm really obsessed with why rates of violence have come down in the past, rather than making prognostications about the future.
And in a sense, World War I helps to prove your point in this book, The Better Angels of Our Nature. Steven Pinker, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Steven Pinker up there at WGBH, our partner station in Boston. He's a professor of psychology at Harvard University, author of The Better Angels of Our Nature.
Share your thoughts about violence, war, or better angels. You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or just head over to our website at thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, WKKF.org. The Takeaway is produced by WNYC and Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.